following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Another Tuesday means it's time for another edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, to bring you anything and everything you might want to know about Georgia Southern athletics over the past week and the week coming up, as Georgia Southern football got the victory over the Texas State Bobcats this past Saturday. 40-38, the final score at Allen E. Paulson Stadium on Senior Day and on Ag Day. It wasn't necessarily the fullest we have seen Allen E. Paulson Stadium, again, with still at 25% capacity. But it was a senior day, and it was one to really tip your cap off for those guys going out.
One of the biggest senior classes that we've had in recent memory, and considering how they entered Statesboro, whether it was in 2016 and they redshirted for a team that was coming off of a GoDaddy Bowl victory only to go 5-7, or if you're a true freshman in 2017, you go through an 0-9 start, a coaching change, only to help get Coach Luntz for the job that he now has 3 years later, and then the renaissance of 18, winning 10 games, going back to a bowl game last year. And, oh, by the way, even though it doesn't necessarily feel like it all the time, Georgia Southern is 6-2 in the middle of a pandemic. So they've been part of all of that, and that's quite a story to tell.
As always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Dive right into the past week in Georgia Southern athletics. Georgia Southern men's soccer sees their season come to a close as they fell in the first round of the Sun Belt Conference tournament to Coastal Carolina up in Atlanta at Turner Field. Fell 6-0 to the Chanticleers, who would go on to win the Sun Belt Conference tournament on Sunday. Adam Davey last week was named to the All-Sun Belt team, but wrapping it up for Georgia Southern men's soccer as far as 2020 is concerned. Georgia Southern women's golf was in Mercer last Monday and Tuesday as the team finished 6th at the Brickyard Golf Club up in Macon, as Ella Ofstedal fires a 70 on Tuesday and earns the top medalist honors for Georgia Southern women's golf. That tournament will finish up their fall portion of the season. They'll be getting it back going up in February. Georgia Southern Rifle had a heck of a weekend over at the Shooting Sports Education Center as they won the Georgia Collegiate Championship, defeating North Georgia and Georgia Military College. Now, defeating North Georgia, they were number 20 in the country, defeated them by 1 point in the first win against a ranked opponent in program history.
We had said it the week before, North Georgia has a really good program, and that's quite a feather in the cap of Coach Sandra Warman. Remember, a year ago, multiple conference champions with an all-freshman roster. So you saw what could be done when there wasn't a whole lot of experience. Now you've got some experience, and, oh, look, there's a ranked victory, just if you want to add that.
Got to catch up with Coach Warman yesterday with Coach's Corner on Blue White Weekly, going to be coming out on Saturday on WJCL at 11:30 in the morning. And she calls her team, the entire roster is made up of freshmen and sophomores. She calls them the Froshmore team.
I've never heard that.
I hadn't either. I thought it was pretty funny.
Makes me feel like Frogmore Stew or something, but I know that's not the same thing.
Rifle will take on number 11 Alaska Fairbanks in Oxford, Mississippi, coming up on Thursday morning.
Look out.
Georgia Southern volleyball back in hander this past weekend against the Trojans of Troy after falling in the first set on Thursday morning. got the fire lit underneath him and took the final two sets of the weekend against the Trojans of Troy. They now move on to the Sun Belt Conference Championships in Foley, Alabama. Now, the Sun Belt Conference tournament, a little bit different. It starts off with pool play, and that'll start on Wednesday as Georgia Southern takes on Troy at 8:30 on Wednesday. Then on Thursday, they face the Mavericks of UT Arlington at 8:30 as well. Again, a lot of seasons starting to come to a close in 2020. Get going with basketball here in a couple of weeks. Again, November 25th, the first day that basketballs can have a game. Expected that both basketballs will have a game. It's just a matter of who, what, when, where, and why. Well, I guess, we know the why.
Well, there's still time.
There's still.
There's 8 days from now. So we'll know who it is here at some point.
It'll be fine. We'll be all right.
But either way, Coach Anita Howard, Coach Brian Berg, their squads will get it rolling. We know there's been some noise regarding the possibility of no non-conference games this year, but we're getting so close to the point that the start date has been confirmed for the 25th. And look, it doesn't mean you have to play on that date, but if that is set as the starting point for the non-conference season, you only have 5 weeks to play whatever you can get in the non-conference before, at least in the Sun Belt. When Jan 1 hits, it's 18 league games, and then whoever's left goes to Pensacola to see who goes to the NCAA tournament. And we find out on Monday that the NCAA for March Madness this year is planning on a full bubble format. There will be no regional sites this year. So everybody is going to go to a determined spot, which it's likely going to be Indianapolis, where the Final Four would have been anyway. So instead of teams scrambling at the last second, okay, where are we going to go? Where could we possibly get put? There's no such thing. If you win your conference tournament, you are going to Indianapolis.
Indianapolis is one of my favorite cities that we have gone to. Got to go a couple of years ago when women's basketball went to IUPUI.
Mm-hmm.
But I love going to Indy.
And then 3 years ago, Georgia Southern football stayed there when played Indiana. The game was in Bloomington, but I think when we stayed in Indianapolis, we went to Lock Miller's Pub, which was right across the street from our hotel. The fried cheese stuffed pretzel.
Oh.
That was the ticket.
Yeah, I didn't think we were going to get Big Guy out of there.
Well, we almost didn't. It was an earlier kick that day, too, and look, the game didn't go that well. But like we talk about a lot on these, we love the road for the chance to eat, to have fellowship, to catch up with each other, because at home it's a little bit more difficult with the tailgate show taking place at the stage and having to sprint back up to the booth to get things ready for the start of the contest. Frank goes to the sideline for WJCL to do his actual job. We don't get to see Russ during the game because he's our sideline reporter, but the road is really the chance where we get to travel together, we get to eat together, we get to experience a new time and place together. Different this year because of the pandemic, we're not able to explore like we usually would, but we can still watch Frank come through the dry ice and do a karate kick on social media. We can always have a story.
Hopefully we've got the fog inside the plane on Friday when we load up to go to West Point.
I'd like to see him get on the plane to bring a musket, or if he came in full dress, or I don't know. With Frank, I'm never surprised.
This past Saturday, it was Georgia Southern knocking off the Texas State Bobcats. Final score of 40-38, a little bit more of a shootout than everybody anticipated. We talked about it pretty much all week long, how this was a team that was a lot better than 1-8, what their record was coming into the game. And we talked about it with Coach Lunsford on Monday night over at the Gene Bishop Fieldhouse the week leading into it, that this was a game where you really needed to get out in front early and stay out in front, because if you let them kind of into the game and let them realize that they are better than 1-8, it's probably not going to go your way. It didn't necessarily go the way Georgia Southern had anticipated, but at the end of the day, again, 40 is more than 38.
What you just said, both things happened. They got out early. They were up 13 points at home, which is typically, that's it. That's ball game. Let's start thinking about next week. But then in a span of 18 seconds in the second quarter, Texas State had back-to-back touchdowns. But to Georgia Southern's credit, when they had to, plays were made. I think about Shy's run on 4th-and-1 in the second quarter. I think about Speedy's run from 27 yards, which effectively put the game out of reach. And then Logan Wright filling in as the new dive back, I guess you would say, taking that J.D. King role since he's out for the season. We had mentioned his prowess getting first downs before that point, especially on third downs. He's really become that third and short guy. it was out in full force last weekend. Big run after big run. He ends up with just shy of 100 yards. And I think that his ability to grind out those tough yards, oftentimes, like we mentioned with J.D. King and at ULM, he did pop his big runs. But if you don't have somebody that's built big to be able to run it between the tackles, wear down the defense, keep possession, work the clock, if you don't have someone like that, then this offense is useless.
And I think you and Terry talked about it throughout the broadcast of it would seem like he runs into the pile and what you think is a yard or two gain ends up being 4 or 5.
And the image of Jerick McKinnon during that second North Dakota State game in 2012, I've watched that a couple of times, and it just didn't seem like he was gaining all that much, but you would look, he had 5-6 yards, and all of a sudden you're 2nd and 5, 2nd and 4. That was a big point for Georgia Southern offensively on Saturday. It was consistent with 5-, 6-, 7-yard gains on first down. They had 32 first down plays on Saturday. 17 of those gained at least 6 yards. So when you're 2nd down and 4, you're gravy. And when we talk about Army in the final segment, they're going to be much of the same ilk. 3rd down, 8 out of 16. We talked about the big plays from Shy, from Speedy, from Logan to gain those first downs. And most of the time it was 3rd and 4 or less. And then the other part of it is, we mentioned it earlier, Georgia Southern impressively is 6-2 in the middle of a pandemic, one of only 15 teams in the country that has 6 wins. And then on the other side, the fan of you wants to say, how is this team 6-2? Because it's almost as if they open up the front door and welcome adversity in. They want these close games because, fortunately, they've gone 5-1 this year in one-score games, which is an amazing stat. The couple times it's burned them were the couple losses against ranked teams. Louisiana made a 53-yard field goal. Coastal Carolina, big played the Eagles in the first half because the Eagles couldn't move the ball during the second half. Coastal got those 2 late touchdowns and ended up with what turned out to be a convincing win. This team is doing enough. They are fulfilling the requirements most of the time. But the growing concern is that, especially on offense, and look, I'm not going to split hairs over a team that just ran for 386, because that's a great number in this day. That's a 20-season high. But when you need Alex Rainer 4 times, you really have to wonder what it's going to take to get 6/7 instead of 3. Because with 4 games left in the regular season, hopefully a bowl game, you hope that that doesn't come back to bite you like it did against the Cajuns and against Coastal Carolina. Now, to Georgia Southern's credit, 6-2 is better than average. It is good. It is quite good. But you can't help but wonder, what if this team was 8-0? What if this was a ranked team going up to West Point? They simply have to find a way to get more in the end zone than having to rely on Alex Rainer. Now, he made all 4 of his kicks. He's 12 of 15 on the year. How would you move on from Tyler Bass? I think Rainer has done a pretty commendable job. But something needs to occur that gets these Eagles into the end zone more consistently. Went 6 of 6 in the red zone. Awesome. What's one of the parts of the plan to win? You got to score when you get a chance to. But 3 touchdowns, 3 field goals. And Texas State got back into the game in part because of that. While they're getting 3, Texas State was quickly getting touchdowns.
Alex Rainer was named the Lou Groza Award Star of the Week. Also, you mentioned Tyler Bass. He had a pretty exciting day on Sunday. Had set his career high 3 different times throughout the game in the first half. I think the one that sent them into halftime, a 58-yarder, and was good by about 10 yards.
He could thank the Arizona Cardinals for playing indoors. But no, you still got to make them. And like Terry says, about 8 times a broadcast, you got to make it between your ears before you make it between the bars.
So congratulations to Tyler Bass and Alex Rainer on their achievements this week. A couple of news notes coming out earlier on in the week. It did come out on Monday that the Georgia Southern-Georgia State game up at Turner Field in Atlanta will be a noon kick. Or first pitch, whatever you want to say.
Oh, it's absolutely a first pitch.
We'll be on the air at 10 o'clock, and so I think Frank has tabbed it as breakfast with the big guy.
Oh, we'll all go to the Silver Skillet, we'll load up, and then we'll head over to Turner, and we'll call a win, hopefully.
But a noon kickoff, it'll be on ESPN3 next weekend. But first things first, it's Georgia Southern heading up to West Point, New York to take on the Army West Point Black Knights. We'll dive into them in our final segment, but first we pause for some Eagle Tales with Roger Inman.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, thinking about the more than 40 years you've spent in Statesboro, the Eagles have had a lot of really good media relations people over that time.
Matt was probably the worst football guy we had. He loved baseball too much. He was an Astros fan. I'm not sure you say we had any bad media people. They're all very, very good in their own right, including Pat Osterman. And I hope we can get Pat to listen to this one. He just left to go back to Illinois. He should have stayed here because he would have probably still been here to this date. But no, we've not really had any bad, even from the first day with the start of football. I mean, you know, had Rick Mandes as our, I guess we'd call him our first media relations person. Claude was gone by then, yeah. On to Athens. We haven't had any bad media people. They've all been very, very good at what we've done here. May not have wrote the stories you want to hear, but some of the stories you may not need to tell proper. But yet, McClelland, two McClellands.
Yeah.
Two McClellands. Spelt differently, but two McClellands. Everybody did a great job here. They had on adventures. Tom went on to East Carolina. Mark went to Memphis. Osterman went back to Illinois. Matt, he went back to Texas. All those guys did a great job for us here. And always fun to be around. And today they do a good job. We just all media, all technically related now. You make a statement today, 5 seconds later, it's on the social world. Everybody knows it. If you get rid of the cameras on the telephone, it'd be a unique world we'd live in. But with the telephones having cameras, there's no secrecy anywhere.
Right you are, Roger. Appreciate it as always. Now let's go to Colin Lazy with this week's Beyond the Bio.
Time now for Beyond the Bio with Colin Lazy.
So we continue on this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. We step into Beyond the Bio and over in the FOC with the recruiting assistant, personnel assistant, about anything that you could possibly ask for over in the FOC, and Andrew Bevel. Appreciate you joining us, bud.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on, Colin.
Now, you've gone through a lot with football over the last couple of years. Worked here as a student assistant when you were still in school at Georgia Southern. When did you decide that working with football, and especially here at Georgia Southern, was something you wanted to do?
I think probably after my sophomore year, I really thought that I wanted to work in this business, especially like in recruiting, just because recruiting is like a lot of fun, especially because I love Georgia Southern and I want to show all these like recruits how great Georgia Southern is. And also too, I love the evaluation of prospects and be able to figure out like, okay, does this kid fit us or not? And it's just fun to me. It's not like super multitasking a lot. It's just a lot of fun to do. You don't get bored with it, in my opinion.
Where did that love for Georgia Southern come from? I know your dad's an alum of Georgia Southern, heavily involved with the program. But where did the love for you for Georgia Southern really come from?
Really the love? I mean, it came from my dad. It came really more in high school when we were coming back for more games. Especially, too, since I was playing high school ball. And then just coming back, because I remember the first time we like really came back was when the 86 National Championship team was recognized. And, I mean, we were coming to games anyway, but after the 86 recognition, like, we found all my dad's friends from college again. He was like, man, I need to come back some more. And ever since then, the rest is history.
You talk about being involved with a lot of different things over with football, having your hand in so many different things, whether it be recruiting, personnel. How much fun is it to kind of see a lot of different aspects of it?
It's a lot of fun because I'm able to learn a lot of different things, especially too, like in, like everybody sees in college football, like there's so much stuff like you have to do.
Yeah.
And having your hand in so many different things it makes you more valuable, especially from what I've been told is that the more things you learn, the more valuable you're going to be, so that you go to one place, it's, you work on one thing, but you might not like that. And then I think like having multiple different things to know will make you more valuable and will also help you be a better like employee for whoever you work for.
Once you graduated from Southern, you went to Louisville for a little bit as an intern working with their football recruiting program. What was the biggest thing seeing it from a different spot, seeing it from a Power 5 quote-unquote school? What was the biggest thing you took away from that experience?
I think the coolest thing that I took away from working at Louisville for that internship, it was just like the facilities are like 10 times bigger. It was insane. Like, Louisville had, I think they had a facility for so many different sports. Field hockey had their own facility. Basketball had their own facility, but they played at the Yum Center, but their facility was super nice. The football facility was really cool, even though, like, it was still somewhat new. Satterfield, from what just watching him, was that, like, he was building a brand new culture there. And that was another thing that I really liked, was that he was bringing his own thing in there and not being, like, stuck in the past, per se. But, like, because, like, when they first got there, they said that they barely had anything on their walls. It was just blank. And just seeing, like, especially, too, like, he was still building that culture there. And, like, just being there, like, all the kids, like, had bought in real quick. And well, that was really cool to see. And then also, too, like, go around and interact with the coaches. And, like, they were very great guys. And then working in their indoor was really cool, because I actually helped. I don't know if they put them up yet or not, but I was helping my boss come up with ideas to put up graphics on the indoor and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think the biggest takeaway was that, like, it was just, like, a whole nother atmosphere. Like, you could tell that, like, that was ACC football.
Take us through the process of coming back to Statesboro to your role now as, like we mentioned, a recruiting assistant, personnel assistant. What was the mindset of coming back to Georgia Southern?
Well, whenever COVID-19 happened, it was during spring break, so, like, I had to come home anyway to come visit my family. And COVID-19 happened, and then my boss was like, dude, just stay down there, like, because it was supposedly really bad up in Louisville. So I just stayed down here, and then I worked from home, and then I decided that I kind of wanted to come home back to Georgia, because, like, 8 hours away from home was rough. I mean, for a 22-year-old, it was kind of rough because I didn't really know anybody up there that well yet. And then it was hard not being around my family, to be supported. But the process coming back was, I was like, I want to come home. And then I hit up Coach Lunsford and saying that, hey, Coach, like, do you have a spot open? Like, I'm just trying to find somewhere to go because I just graduated and, like, I'm trying to get my master's. And then, like, I had talked to a couple of high schools because I thought about possibly wanting to coach high school football. And then Coach Lunsford finally hit me back up saying, like, hey, like, we have a position open. It's not a graduate assistant role. It's more of a volunteer. He said, we would love to have you back. And I just thought that, especially talking with my family, I thought it was the best option to come back and just work in this field and again and really try to find – I mean, I already had the love for working in recruiting. I think, like, coming back here just, like, shows that, like, I really truly love it here. And, like, I love working in recruiting here just because, like, not many kids in the country really know about Georgia Southern. So I thought that it was really fun to come back, especially get to work with the same people that I worked with before.
Take everybody into what recruiting at this level looks like. Everybody hears about signing day, the early signing day, but it's a year-long process, and there's so much that goes into it, from graphics to keeping in touch with the recruits to helping the coaches with their recruiting. Take us through kind of your day-to-day operations of what everything goes on in recruiting here.
Yeah, so usually during the summer, we usually have, like, junior days or camps going on, but obviously because due to COVID-19, we're not able to do that this year. But usually during the summer, we have camps going on just to, like, get kids to come campus so that we can see them. So, like, we can probably see, like, some things that we're probably not able to see on film, and just bringing them here and just doing that. And then we have junior days. It's just bringing more kids that have not seen Georgia Southern before come back. And then whenever the season happens, we'll have kids come and visit game day. Sometimes they'll come during the week, just depending on their schedules. And then over the summer, I'm helping making recruiting graphics, which just to help coaches interact with them. And also, too, like, the kids like seeing their number and name on the back of a Georgia Southern jersey and saying, like, oh, cool, like, I can see myself going there. It's just, like, they put my name on the back of a jersey or something like that. So, yeah. And then, like, during the season, like, whenever they're in season two, do good luck graphics saying, like, hey, good luck against so-and-so. And so it's just where, like, my job is basically to help, not per se help the coaches interact with the players, but, like, just to, like, give the kids some love. Because, like, especially, like, in today's world, everybody loves social media. And I think graphics is just a way to for kids to like post on social media saying like, hey, like check out George Southern. So, yeah.
One of the things that talking to so many people around college athletics now you hear is everybody has people that made a big impact on their life, their career, and is kind of the mentor to them. Still early in your career in athletics, but who are some of the people that have really been a mentor for you?
Some of the people that have been a big mentor for me was probably Coach Lunsford. I think he was probably a really good mentor to me because he got me to really like recruiting. Coach Foster, definitely, just because I like the way the he interacts with guys, and like he's just like especially like around the office, like you always hear like it's a family around here, and I really like that. Phil Gar is probably one of my biggest mentors because like he's been here probably about the same time as me, and he's just helped me grow. Like we've always like come up with new ideas for stuff and stuff like that, and then. Matt Brennan, he's no longer here. He's coaching high school right now, but I think Matt was probably my biggest influence because, like, he really taught me how to evaluate a player and say, like, okay, like, this is what we're looking for and stuff like that, and just showed me, like, the organization of how everything works. And then I think another big mentor was actually the guy when I worked at Louisville, the guy who hired me up there. I think he was the biggest mentor to me because he taught me how to do graphics. He taught me just like the whole process of like more of like in depth of recruiting, because like people don't realize like how much process goes in into like scheduling visits and hotels, blah blah blah, and all that. It's crazy, and especially too at Louisville, it's like they had 6 people in just recruiting. So like if you have like a good staff and like you're able to bring in people for recruiting, it's gonna make things a lot easier in my opinion. But again, like at this level, it's kind of hard to, but I think like all the coaches are very involved in recruiting to where it makes it easier for some of the recruiting staff to work through it.
Finally, before we let you go, this segment's called Beyond the Bio. Give us something that people seeing you around the FOC may not know, something beyond your bio.
I'm a very hard worker, and like I love what I do. I have a passion for this, is that I'm very passionate of what I do. And, I mean, people are able to see that when I talk about George Southern football, when I talk about, like, recruiting and stuff like that. I won't say this is, like, part of my bio, but it's just, like, crazy that I do graphics because I'm colorblind.
Huh.
I'm colorblind, so, like, every time when we do graphics, I always have to ask, like, some people in the office saying, like, hey, how's the colors look on this? It's like, do they match at all? Like, is this, like, too blue? Stuff like that, so we make sure we're not looking like George State blue out here. But yeah, it's just like, especially too, like with some of these colors, it's difficult at times.
How have I known you this long and never knew that?
I thought you knew that.
Oh, maybe I did. I don't know. Andrew, appreciate your time. Thank you for everything that you do for Georgia Southern Athletics. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Again, that's Andrew Bevel, the recruiting assistant, personnel assistant, pretty much anything that you would want or need in the FOC. Andrew has probably had his hand in some way, shape, or form. The son of Leonard Bevel, who Terry always brings up, was the first mascot to go perfect on a season. I think I've heard that a time or two.
I think you heard it earlier today.
Yeah, probably. But appreciate Andrew hanging out with us a little bit and everything that he does to help out the recruiting process for Georgia Southern football, as it's going to look very similar to the old recruiting process coming up this weekend as Georgia Southern heads up to New York to take on the Army Black Knights up at Mikey Stadium. Now, before we dive into the X's and O's...
This could be an episode in and of itself.
Yeah, no kidding. Start a whole new podcast based on this one. But you got the opportunity, what was it, last summer
last summer.
Up to West Point and tour the facility and... You sent us a picture on Sunday that said, this is our booth. I was like, wait a minute, is he already there?
Oh, I got ways. Daryl Lynn and I went on a vacation last summer up to New York City and got a chance to see a lot of things over the course of the 4 days we were up there. But the last day, we drove about an hour north to get to West Point to go on post because Brett Moore, who was the former director of on-campus recruiting, he has now gone into basic training to serve. He took us around all day. We didn't get a chance to see Coach Monk and did get to see Brent Davis for a little while. We visited with him for about 20 minutes or so and got a chance to tour everything they had. It is absolutely amazing. Wasn't sure if we'd be able to get into Mikey Stadium because I'd only heard about the experience. I'd only seen pictures of the actual view, but to be in the booth that we're going to occupy in a few days, and that was during the summer, so I can only imagine the color of the leaves on the trees and how the temperature is going to be that day and just the kind of environment that it's going to be. There's about 4,000 cadets up there, so they'll be the only ones occupying the stands, but just the view, you just want to sit there and look at it. You don't even think about the fact that there's a football game going on the turf below you. It's just, it's that cool to know where you are and to know that it's that gorgeous up there. I don't mean to act like I'm overselling it, but it's going to be unlike anything that we've ever done on this network, and it's going to be unlike anything these guys have ever experienced. Pandemic-wise, they're not going to be able to do everything in terms of touring just because of all the restrictions that are in place, but simply the experience of being able to go and play the United States Military Academy, who a lot of these guys in a few years are going to be defending our freedoms. This is such a cool thing and such a great job by Jared Benko and Mike Buddy, the AD at Army, for getting this done in late August so both teams could have at least close to a full schedule.
Looking at the weather forecast, it looks like it's not going to be quite as bad as it could be.
Yeah.
Looks like a high of 60, a low of 40.
So I'll take it.
Yeah, no doubt. At one point, I think we saw snow in the forecast earlier a couple of weeks ago, but now it looks like the snow may subside, and Lord knows that it could change in 20 minutes.
Well, especially if we're wearing the all-whites. If it snows, we may be really lost.
Yeah. You are not joking. But you dive into this Army Black Knights team, 6-2 on the season under head coach Jeff Munkin. We'll get into all of that in a little bit. But as far as X's and O's are concerned, the biggest thing that you've got to look at for Army was missing their starting quarterback for much of the season, but came back last week against Tulane. Christian Anderson, a junior out of right there in the Bronx, New York, was injured against Abilene Christian in the beginning part of October, but again came back against Tulane. And he's a guy that you could tell last week in the loss to Tulane had been out for a little bit, but when he is going, he goes.
He was supposed to come back for the game that they played against Mercer, but in practice that week he had gotten his foot stepped on. And the coaching staff deemed that let's not rush this. This is a pretty delicate situation. And they could afford to do that because they've had five other quarterbacks that have played this year. And I'm going to get into Anderson more in a minute. But they go down to UTSA after Anderson had gotten hurt. And they played two guys. That was one of their only three road games this year. They played Cade Ballard, a true freshman out of Greenville, Tennessee, and Tyer Tyler, who's more of an athlete, sophomore out of Newport News, Virginia, where Allen Iverson used to play high school football. And there's some great tape on him. Those two combined going into that game had one college snap, and they beat UTSA. And as Anderson kept trying to get better, Army realized that, no, we've got these two guys. We've got Maurice Ballon, who has seen a little bit of action at quarterback. We've also seen Jamel Jones play quarterback. The guy that they expected to start this year, Jabari Laws, has been hurt all year. Got hurt in the Air Force game last year, injured his knee. He hasn't been able to go at all this season. But they have found ways to get to 6-2. Now, when Anderson's healthy, he's a big part of that. Now, he only has 316 yards rushing, and that's the second most on the team. Now, how could a team that runs for 303 yards per game be led by a guy that's only having 316 on the season? Because there's so many people touch the ball. Yeah. If you're on the depth chart, you are touching the football at least a couple of times per game. Anderson, though, he's calm. Doesn't make too many mistakes outside of two picks that he threw last weekend at Tulane, and that game got away from the Black Knights a little bit. They've got so many guys they can just plug in, and part of that is because they don't have any scholarship limitations.
Yeah.
They have 163 guys on their roster.
Jeez.
So they can give out as many scholarships as they want to, which is why they can run out quarterback after quarterback after quarterback. But make no mistake, if four is healthy, four is going to play, and that four is Christian Anderson, and that's the guy that the Eagles have to key on. We'll get to the running backs momentarily because there's a lot of them, but Anderson is what makes them go.
Obviously, I think Russ said it on the Ford Locker Room wrap-up on Saturday, that when you go into a game against Army, if you're Georgia Southern, you don't necessarily have to educate your fans on, okay, this is the dive, this is the pitch. You don't have to educate on the triple option,
no,
thankfully.
They're pretty well schooled by now.
But when you're looking at that first phase in the triple option, the dive back, they call it the fullback up at West Point, and really the guy that has kind of been carrying this team as far as that's concerned is Sandon McCoy out of Kannapolis.
Only averages 3.5 yards per carry, but he scored 8 touchdowns. When they get inside the 5-yard line, this is who's getting the ball. Now, one way you can look at it is don't let him get inside the 5-yard line, but the offense that Army runs, which Georgia Southern is well aware of because it was the staple here for right around 30 years, when that offense gets as close as they often do, 3's going to get it. 4's going to have to give it off to 3. But Sandon McCoy has 3 3-touchdown games in his career, and that's half of his 18 total. Now, they've got guys behind him. Cade Bernard is a junior. Jacoby Buchanan, I almost feel bad that Georgia Southern has to tackle him Saturday. It's like C.J. Wright is in Army's backfield. He's listed at 6 feet, 260, but he showed up on post about 300 pounds. So he's down close to 40 since he arrived at West Point. And there's a couple of other guys that could see reps as well. They just have so many guys that you need to be prepared for. In fact, their fifth string fullback threw a pass last week.
Of course he did.
On a fourth down play. That's how creative Brent Davis has gotten. And they do run a little bit of shotgun. Novel concept, running the option out of the shotgun. They did that a few snaps last week. But you need to be familiar with everybody that's listed because they're all going to see time.
You talk about McCoy being the guy that 5-yard line and in, he's getting the ball more often than not. But outside of that, you look at a guy in their A-back, and Tyrell Robinson, he only has 347 yards. I only say only, but he's averaging 8 yards a tote, but doesn't have a touchdown on the ground, has 2 through the air. But for a guy that is averaging 8 yards per carry, not to have a touchdown just seems odd to me.
True freshman, one of 27 guys on this roster that's from the state of Georgia. You're wondering, well, how is a school in West Point, New York, getting so many guys from Georgia? Well, let's not think too hard about that. When he's from Dallas, went to East Paulding High School, I think he's the fastest guy on the roster. And watching a few of their games, their home games on the CBS Sports Network, thankfully they are all televised. And because of their unique television contract, all of their games do get shown on TV. They consistently say that he is the fastest guy on this team, and they look for ways to get him the ball. Now, he is involved in the return game as well. He had a receiving touchdown at Tulane last week that got Army on the board after they had fallen behind 14-0. If he gets the edge, and I know Georgia Southern has a lot of athletes, but if he gets the edge, you may only see the back of his jersey. He's that fast.
It seems weird to not talk about receivers when you're talking about a football game. But when you're looking at Army, yeah, you probably need to bring them up. But
just in case.
Yeah, just in case. Army is a team that'll throw the ball a little bit, probably a little bit more than Jeff Munkin did when he was here at Georgia Southern. And I think that's just kind of your natural evolution of what college football is. You have to throw it a little bit more than you did here at Georgia Southern. But there's a couple of guys. As far as receiving, you look at Michael Roberts, a touchdown on the year, 106 yards on 7 catches, but not a whole lot of movement through the air.
And those 7 catches are the most on the team.
Yeah.
Now they've got Brandon Walters as well. Roberts, you already talked about. He's recently coming off of an injury. Isaiah Alston, a true freshman out of New Jersey, he's recently coming off of injury. Another position group that benefits from the massive depth that Army enjoys. If someone goes out, someone else comes in. 2 guys go out, 3 more ready to go. That's just the nature of having the kind of roster that they do. And considering that a year ago this team went 5-8, and they probably should have been better than that, but they had some mistakes. They had some turnover issues last year. They're motivated to be better. Now, part of it has been their schedule, because I think we had talked earlier this summer that they were down to 3 games at one point, and that's the perils of being an independent when you're not in a conference. You've got to create your schedule every year. That's what New Mexico State has to do, and that's also what UMass has to do. You've got to find a way to fill every slot every year. Army was down to 3 games, so that made sense for Georgia Southern and the Black Knights to get something done, and it's on this weekend that the Eagles would have been playing at Ole Miss, and coincidentally enough, Ole Miss just had their game postponed this weekend, so that could have been an option anyway in a humorous way. The fact that it's the first meeting between these teams, And the fact that these cultures, these staffs, these schemes are so, so similar, I'm very curious to see what the deciding factor is. It could come down to Georgia Southern being blue-collar, disciplined, and tough, but that's what Army says as well. It's one of the things that guides them, not just on the football field, but how it's going to guide them throughout the rest of their lives.
You look at all three phases of this football game, Georgia Southern and Army are connected in some way, shape, and form. Obviously, on the offensive side, you got Brent Davis running that offense for Army, was the offensive coordinator here under Jeff Monken. You've got on the special team side, everybody knows Monken's background as far as special teams is concerned, a lot like Coach Lunsford. But on the defensive side, Nate Woody in his first year, I feel like every single year that Georgia Southern plays football, you got to go up against Nate Woody in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, you're going to find him somehow, whether he spent the time that he did at Wofford, he was at Appalachian State for parts of five seasons. He actually was at Georgia State for about the length of time that it took me to say that before moving on to Michigan to be an analyst last year under Jim Harbaugh. That's after he spent 2018 with Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech, but then PJ, of course, retiring, but now Woody is back in the game in his first year at Army. They run the 3-4, just like the 3-4 that Georgia Southern does, and it's a lot like the 3-4 that Scott Sloan was involved with when he coached with Coach Woody at Appalachian State. So it's another layer of, okay, if everybody knows what everybody's going to do, where do you find the gap? How do you separate yourself?
That's got to be – we've talked about so many games that feel like another opener, that either it's the first time that the opponent's playing or there's so many guys out that you're not real sure who you're playing against. This is the complete opposite of that. It's the first time Georgia Southern has ever played Army, but you feel like you've played this team the last 10 years.
I also feel like if the coaching staffs could, they would split each other up and spend time on the other sideline just because they know each other so well. Greg Gasparato is somebody that's a first-year coach at West Point. He was on staff with Coach Sloan multiple times at App. Their quarterback's coach is Cody Worley, spent a number of years at Kennesaw State. He was at the Citadel for a couple of seasons, quality control, then coached the quarterbacks. He played at Furman, so when you bring the Southern Conference back in, that adds another set of relationships and another set of tie-ins and how these relationships get even deeper as far back as you go and the different places that these guys have been. I think they're looking forward to seeing each other and catching up for as little as they'll get to do, just as much as they are playing against each other.
You look at somebody else that kind of gets lost in all of this is Sean Saturnio. He is a guy, the special teams coordinator up at Army. He is one of the most genuine people I have ever met, and he's one of the guys that direct connection again to Georgia Southern, but I think kind of gets lost in the weeds a little bit.
Terry mentioned Mitch Ware.
Yeah.
Had him on the Letterman's Lounge a couple of weekends ago. Coach Saturnio was here the last two seasons that Coach Monken was here coaching tight ends. And you've also got to remember that that last season, that 2013 season that ended in the swamp when Georgia Southern beat Florida, Coach Monken hired Coach Lunsford to be the slot backs coach. And it was in part, we find this out in greater detail during his press conference on Monday, that was because a lot of the guys that were already on staff for Coach Monken that were advocating to get Coach Lunsford back here. Remember, he had spent parts of three seasons here, 03 through the start of 06, under Coach Seawalk. But the relationships that he had established, because let's be honest, Coach Lunsford and Coach Monken did not know each other that well at that point. But the words that were spoken by the guys that were there and the spot that needed to be filled, that's how Chad got here. That's 7 years ago. He's still here, and now he's the head coach. So as much as these seniors were helpful in getting Coach from being the recruiting coordinator at one point to wide receivers coach at one point to now the head coach, special teams coordinator, everything kind of mixes together. But the fact that he is back here, period, Jeff Monken was responsible for that, and Coach even said on Monday that he owes a lot to Coach Monken for giving him that opportunity.
It's going to be a fun one up in West Point, no matter the outcome. Obviously, Georgia Southern would like to come home with a victory, but it's going to be a heck of an experience this Saturday up at Mikey Stadium. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I like the way that you put that. Look, of course, we're looking forward to an Eagle victory. We would love to bring a 7-2 record back to Statesboro, but this is an experience, and we talk all the time when we go on the road. It's about experiences. It's about making memories, and whatever happens on Saturday – knock on wood, that this actually happens, this is going to be something that these guys always remember.
I go back to something that Russ and I talked about on the Ford Locker Room wrap-up when we were looking ahead to this game. There's a lot of times people will ask us, what's the coolest place you've been? What's the best thing that you've experienced? The thing I always go back to is, now, it was cold again, so I don't know why cold always kind of follows me.
I know where you're going.
But being up at Navy, now, it wasn't necessarily that much fun to watch the football game, but pregame, watching all the cadets march in, that was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Now, and that includes the Tiger Walk and everybody running down the hill at Clemson, everything that goes on with Colin Baton Rouge down at LSU. We've been to all the popular college football, what everybody talks about on game day. But that's probably the coolest thing I've experienced at this point. And I got to imagine this Saturday up at West Point is going to just be another layer to that.
And I can even speak to it a little bit. Guys listening know that I spent parts of 6 years on the Citadel's broadcast crew from 08 through 10 as the studio host and then taking over the play-by-play reins in 2011. Every home game at Johnson Haygood Stadium, the South Carolina Corps of Cadets walks through that gate and they take the field for the national anthem. They create the block C that the Bulldogs run out of in the Altman Center off to the right side. It happens every single home game. Well, not this year because they only played one and we're in the middle of a pandemic, but you get the idea. But experiencing that on that level, to know that we're about to go to a place where it's the ability to reach out and touch history. And we talked about this earlier last week, that we're going to a place that has a building where when you walk in, on one side is the cannon that fired the first shot in the Civil War, and on the other side is the cannon that fired the last shot of the Civil War. That'll shake you a little bit.
Yeah.
There's Victory Hill. There's the Hudson River that flows into campus. It's cut off, and then you get the Lusk Reservoir that's the body of water that's directly behind the stands on the opposing side. And when Army scores, they fire off cannons that are on the other side of the reservoir. They're a little bit louder this year because there's only 4,000 people in stadium. Georgia Southern is based on tradition. They have a lot of them, and they're very proud of them. That's what Army West Point is based on. And we get a chance to see all of that up close. We may not get the whole experience, but I'm just telling you, it's going to get to these guys like they never thought.
It's going to be a lot of fun up at Mikey Stadium. Again, a 12 noon kickoff from On Base up in West Point, New York. Going to also be a 10 o'clock airtime, so rise and shine with Frank Russ, Terry, and I. Again, 10 a.m. the airtime on the Georgia Southern Sports Network. Until this weekend, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.